Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's paid commercial programming. The content and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WSSP, Odyssey Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors.
From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between. Let's talk everything outdoors.
Aboard! You're on the crazy train!
All aboard!
Welcome to the Wacky Walleye Cutting Edge Outdoor Show. Fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on 1250 AM, The Fan.
Well, good morning, everybody. You know, there's a lot on Saturday morning that's going on from 6 to 8 a.m. here on Sports Radio 1250, The Fan. It's the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors with your hosts, Dan Bush and me, Tom Neubauer. Get your tickets punched for a fun and informative ride on the crazy train. Yeah, we're going to talk about fishing and hunting and just about anything Wisconsin's great outdoors. Well, we'll be discussed. And don't forget the Hornswoggle. You got to wait for that at right after the 6:45 break. Anyway, Sam Schmitz is on the board as usual. And Danny, good morning. How are you today? Is Danny there?
I'm doing well.
There he is. Hey.
Yeah.
Boy, kind of a crappy morning out, eh?
Well, the rain woke me up today, Tom. So
yeah, I believe
that it. That was a good thing. Otherwise, you know, the old Pewaukee Beach party was going on last night. If that pouring rain hadn't woke me up this morning, you might be by yourself right now, buddy.
Oh, really? You were having a good time last night?
Yeah, out there shaking hands, kissing babies, you know, handing out hats, running for office. You know, I think I'll run for governor. Actually, it turned out pretty good crowd out there. It's going on again tonight, so there will be
right
some
at
bands.
The beach in downtown Pewaukee, right?
Yes, and 4th of July, as a matter of fact, they have, you know, big goings on out here. Our buddy Dave Olson, his band is going to be playing 4th of July out here in Pewaukee.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, right across the corner from me by the beach. So, yeah, we encourage everybody to come on out and listen to the Big O's band. I think it's called Magnum 4 or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember. But, Dave, he's a multi-talented guy, my friend.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time out there.
Yeah. What do you do 4th of July? Do you do anything anymore other than sit in a recliner and watch? No?
No.
Nothing?
Not really.
You don't go watch fireworks or anything?
No.
My
one son takes his kids, you know, him and his wife take their kids to watch the fireworks. But other than that, no, we... To me, it's just another day. Like, I mean, I put out the flag and everything, you know. I mean, but no, we don't go anywhere or anything, no. We used to. You know, one of my nieces always had a July 4th party. But, she hasn't had that in a couple of years, I think, because of the COVID, so.
Well, yeah, I remember one 4th of July, I went up north to my buddy Craig's place up by Crivets. And, we had a fun night, and then we got back to the cabin, and we decided to have some fireworks of our own, so we pulled out the shotguns and started blasting into the air at two, three in the morning. Just boom, boom, boom. We were shooting, you know, straight up in the woods. Nobody was in danger, but we thought that was great fun.
Yeah, when we were younger, we'd take our kids to, you know, to fireworks event. One time we were up north by one of my wife's sisters and her husband and kids live up near the town of Wittenberg. Actually, they live in between Galloway and Eldoran, not the planet Eldoran, but
I thought there was a high school, Wittenberg Burnhamwood or something like that up there.
There's a Wittenberg, but that's just down the road a piece. That's the one. I always say near Wittenberg because that's the one big town in the area. I mean, if you tell people Eldoran or Galloway, they go, "Huh? What's that?" So anyway, but we were up there one time, and it was kind of funny. We were watching fireworks up there with the kids, and the fireworks, the wind was blowing in such a way that, you know, those hot embers that come down, they were dropping all around us. We had to move. Yeah, we didn't want to get one of those hot embers dropping on one of us. So,
you know, it's surprising there's not more fires started with those, you know, fireworks displays.
Yeah, really. Well, this year, depending on what the drought situation is, some places might not be having them just because of that, you know.
Well, the fire danger still is high, according to the emails I get from the Wisconsin DNR. Some parts of the state more so than others. So I guess, a guy always has to be careful. I noticed, you know, those businesses that I can never figure out how they make a living. You drive by them, there's a big metal building that says fireworks on it. And like 11 and a half months out of the year, there's not a single car in the parking lot. And you wonder, what are they? Are they selling drugs out the back door of those places or what? How can they be, you know, even affording the, you know, to pay for their space? But those places are pretty full right now. I see cars and all of a sudden more of those fireworks places seem to be popping up overnight out of nowhere.
Yeah, and to get the really good stuff, you got to drive out of state.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to get the really good stuff. I'm not going to say who, but I know one of my relatives usually does that, you know. But
you're saying
go ahead.
Really good is basically a synonym for really illegal stuff.
Exactly, yes.
Gotcha.
And at least at Pewaukee, you know, they fire them off that island out in front of you, and, you know, the embers land in the lake, you know, basically. So that's
and there's all kind, but, you know, there's all kinds of boats hanging around there, too.
I know. It's like there's, like, I don't know, got to be 100 boats sitting out there, and it's like, man.
you know what? I never really got the fireworks thing at all, to be honest with you. The whole thing, like, when I grew up, something about young boys, they love things that go bang and blow things up,
oh, yeah.
You know. So,
yep.
You know, they'd speak about, you know, M80s with reverence in their voice. And they'd be off. But anything that just went bang, if I want to hear bang, it'll be a shotgun and I'll see a grouse going down at the other end. You know, that's my idea of having fun and hearing a big bang. But the whole thing about just making noise for making noise sake, I never even got it. Even the firecracker thing. Still don't get it.
I don't think it's just the noise. I think with fireworks, it's the different arrays of colors and designs.
Well, that I got as a kid.
Yeah.
Sparklers.
But boom. Remember this? They're just the big booms. It's nah.
Sparklers, and then they came out with colored sparklers. And colored sparklers were really cool, Tom. But they burned super fast. But again, I don't even think they'd let kids have sparklers. Now, you realize you could burn yourself with those things right after they, you know, they were really hot.
Oh, yeah.
You're giving a little five-year-old kid a sparkler. He's running around waving it in his brother's face.
Yep. Yeah, they probably weren't the safest thing around. I'm sure there were a few burns happening because of those.
Safest. You're right. I mean, the stuff they let us do as kids, ride bikes without helmets, sparklers, and you could leave in the morning and they just told you, be back at supper time. And if you were gone for 12 hours, they didn't, you know, your picture wasn't on a milk carton.
Yeah, you know, I can't ever remember any one of my friends or me or anybody I knew hurt their head from riding a bike. I can't remember anything like that.
No head injuries that you can remember.
None.
Well,
I'll tell you one. Oh, go ahead.
Well, how about crashes? Can you remember crashes on a bike?
Oh, yeah, a few of those, sure. Yeah.
A few. We had them all the time, man.
Yeah.
One time my brother was, you know, riding down the street, and he'd picked up his rabbit trap, and he was trying to carry it and ride with no hands, and he kind of went off the beaten path on the sidewalk and went straight into a tree. He was knocked unconscious for several minutes. He later came to. Rabbit trap and bike laying by his side in the lawn. I don't think he ever told my parents. I went right off the handlebars one time on Deborah Lane in Green Bay, and I slid literally on my chin, on my palms of my hand, my chest, in the front of my teeth, and I scraped my teeth along the concrete. Yeah, yeah. I had blood blisters the size of quarters on each hand. Nowadays, I think the parents would have been, you know, taking you into the paramedics, but you just shook it off. I don't even think I went back inside. So the things, you know, we had horrendous crashes on our bikes back then, but no debilitating head injuries, and we sure never thought about wearing a helmet.
Yeah, I remember learning how to ride a bike in the alley where we lived, and I remember falling down so many damn times and so many bruises, you know, until I finally got the hang of it. But, yeah, that was a learning experience.
Training wheels, Tom. Didn't you have training wheels?
No, no.
Do you remember that? They had training wheels on bikes.
Oh, they still do for, like,
do they still?
Kids. Yeah.
They still do?
Yeah. My grandson, he was, last year when he was five, he had training wheels on his bike. But last year, he wanted to ride it without training wheels because his sister was riding without training wheels, you know. So my son took him off, and he fell down a couple of times. And after that, he was going like there's no tomorrow, you know, and he's off and he's fine. You know, it's like with bikes, it's like once you learn, that's it for life, you know.
Well, the old expression, Tom, it's like riding a bike,
yeah,
you know.
There's
a reason for that.
Yep. Hey, we got an email that came in yesterday from Jake in Waukesha. Then this is interesting. This is something that you brought up. Jake in Waukesha says, I was thinking about Danny's tangent about common Wisconsin lake names a week or two ago. So here you go. The five most common lake names. Mud Lake, 116 lakes. Bass Lake, 82. Long Lake, 59. Spring Lake, 49, and Lost Lake, 42. So out of the 15,000 or so named lakes in Wisconsin, that's the group. That's the most common. Mud, Bass, Long, Spring, and Lost.
Mud and Bass. Yeah, I should have thought of that.
And Long Lake too. Yeah, you know. So
lots of Long Lake. How come there's no lakes called Short?
Good question.
I mean, if there's
no
a long,
short, no
there's got to be Short Lake.
Yeah.
Or Little Lake.
Well, you know, and then there's Lost Lakes, and I remember there is a lake called Found Lake. And somebody found it, so they called it Found Lake.
Oh, okay.
There is a Found.
Found Lake, okay.
And I fished a Spring Lake, but it wasn't called Spring Lake. It was called Blue Springs Lake.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, I got another email that I got said that this is great outdoors month. Now, last week, I was asking you about some so-called National Fishing Day. Now it's great outdoors month. I think they're talking about July. Have you ever heard of great outdoors month?
Nope, never.
Why do people keep making up all these holidays we know nothing about?
I know, they just make I think every week or every week has got a holiday for it, some kind of goofy holiday, you know?
Yeah.
So, we don't know and nobody cares about.
Great Outdoors Month.
Yeah, it's Great Outdoors Month.
Great Outdoors Month anytime you can get out, so.
Exactly. We got another one here. I'll make this quick. This is from a regular listener, Mark. It says, hilarious at the end where he says muskrats are very vicious animals. This I guess, was in the Waukesha Freeman. They had an article on Senate loosens rules on killing nuisance beavers and muskrats. And at, right at the end of the article, now, Mark thinks this is funny, because it says, if you ever had an encounter with a muskrat, they can jump 5 or 6 feet in the air. They're very vicious animals. Did you know muskrats were vicious animals?
Well, listen, you show me a muskrat that can jump 5 or 6 feet in the air, and I'll show you a muskrat that should be getting ready for the Muskrat Olympics, because I don't think they can jump 5 or 6 feet in the air. What are we talking about, a kangaroo here?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I never knew them as being vicious, you know. I never had an encounter with one like that, you know. So.
Well, I did have an encounter, Tom, with a muskrat one time. I saved the dog. There was a dog outside by the boat launch here, and there was a muskrat there. And it actually, the muskrat was acting kind of strange, and it bit the dog in the nose.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and I went over there, and I whacked the muskrat with a club and killed it. And then the dog owner, I told her, I said, you know, you might want to make sure your dog's vaccinated for rabies or something, because, you know, this muskrat was acting strange. And I think it was acting kind of sick, and that's why the dog just went up over to kind of sniff it or whatever,
yeah,
didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and got bit by the muskrat. But no, that muskrat did not jump 5 or 6 feet in the air. In fact, there's a muskrat that lives right out here underneath the pier over here where I'm at. I was fishing off the dock yesterday, and all of a sudden I looked and something came swimming underneath the pier and passed me. I thought it was a duck, and I looked down, it's a muskrat. But you know what he's doing? He's munching on all the weeds. He's all the floating weeds and stuff, he's chowing those down. So, I mean, if you got a lake with a weed problem, I don't think a muskrat's a bad thing to have, because they eat the weeds, it looks like to me.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt. And you know what else won't hurt?
It's a smooth break.
Yeah, our first ad of the day. So, folks, you know, it's a nice rainy morning, so sit back, listen to a few ads, because we'll be right back. Grab that cup of coffee, listen to more of Dan and Tom. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors, presented by Bait Mate Fish Attractant. I'm Dan Bush, along with Tom Neubauer. Thanks for getting on board the crazy train this morning with us. And Tom, I got another email that said the DNR is accepting applications for a fall deer hunt at Sand Hill Wildlife Area. Evidently, this is some kind of a program for people to learn how to hunt, for like new hunters, and they're stressing especially like a youth program for kids the age of 12 to 15. But do you remember when they had that Sand Hill, you know, wildlife hunt years and years ago?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I remember years and years ago, I think what they did with Sand Hill was they like fenced it off or whatever, and I could be, Al Shook would know more about this, I'm sure he's an old guy, he'd remember. They like fenced it off and they left it where they did no deer hunting for a number of years. And I think it was because they wanted to study, I don't know, you know, the effect of, you know, of not hunting or whatever, and population, whatever they were studying, it was all whitetail related. But then they actually, as I recall, had like a drawing for a special Sand Hill hunt. And I believe there was a special muzzleloader hunt. Because a friend of mine up in Green Bay oftentimes told me the story of how he had this tag for the special Sand Hill muzzleloader hunt, and he sat like freezing for days in a stand, not moving, just sitting there on a stump or whatever. And finally, the glorious 10-point buck majestically strode up and stood broadside, and when he went to shoot the muzzle loader, it was nothing but a click. So, and the thing, because those muzzle loaders, I mean, I think back in the day, I never shot one, but I think there was something that you had to keep whatever, the primer or whatever,
It'd be dry. If it got wet, it didn't work, yeah.
You were screwed, yeah. So anyway, my friend Craig lost the buck of a lifetime. And I think at that point, you got to, like, don't you have to reload or something? Once it fails to fire, you got to reload, and so
or you got to put a new primer in.
Put a new primer in. Well, anyway, I guess at that point it was useless, because if he'd go to even try and reload, the thing would be bounding away. So he just looked at it and shrugged his shoulders, and there it was, gone.
Yeah, I forgot to tell people that if they wanted to be part of the show with any questions or comments, they can call us at 414-799-1250, or they can email us live at ceoguys@yahoo.com. Forgot to mention that at the opening of the show. So.
Yeah, don't forget that, Tom.
Okay. Did you ever hear of the movie Big Mouth by Glenn Lau?
No.
Well, first of all, Glenn Lau passed away just recently, and he was like an innovator of fish movies. He kind of like the Jacques Cousteau in America, okay? And he made a movie that when I saw it, we saw it in a theater. That's how cool it was. It was called Big Mouth, and it was about the life of a largemouth bass. And he did this whole movie underwater, right up close and personal, and explained everything about how largemouth bass reproduce and what they do and where they go and all this stuff. I'm telling you, it was an awesome, awesome movie to see. And the other day, I was looking for it on eBay and Amazon, and I couldn't find a DVD or anything of the movie Big Mouth. No mention of it at all, you know. But I was just wondering if any of our listeners listening right now saw the movie Big Mouth and what they thought. I mean, it was great. I mean, I learned so much, you know, about bass in that movie. And I think it came out in, like, 1973, I think it was. So it was really ahead of its time.
Yeah, several things really strike me on that, Tom. Number one is that that a movie called Big Mouth about largemouth bass would actually make it into a mainstream movie theater.
Yeah,
that sounds like the craziest movie I've ever heard of.
But it was really good. It was really interesting. I mean, you didn't take your eyes off the screen. It was so, and the commentary was so interesting.
Well, Tom, yeah, for dummies like you and me who like to fish so much, it'd be a great movie. But how's the mainstream public going to go watch a movie about largemouth bass?
I don't know.
I mean, it was
I know what you mean. Yeah.
So it was like at Marcus Theater or something?
No, actually, it was in a theater down in, I think it was in Racine. I think it was in a Racine theater that we saw it in, and all the bass heads were there. I mean, there was a lot of people there, but it was mainly guys, you know, bass fishermen. You know.
All the bass heads.
Yeah.
Is this a theater that normally specialized in X-rated movies? And then, you know.
That I don't know.
Because there were always those seedy theaters that every town had one that specialized in the, you know, in the X-rated movies. So, you know, they decided to mix it up and show the guys a little bass instead.
That might be. I don't know. I don't remember that part, but do remember the movie. I was just wondering if any of our listeners saw it, you know.
I'll be shocked if anybody alive has seen the movie Big Mouth.
Yeah. God, I wish I could find a DVD of that. I mean, that would be so cool. I mean, you would like it. I mean,
I guess really I would. I'm making fun of it. I just can't imagine some guy making a movie about bass and actually making money on it. But
yeah, he was under the water with them, lived with them. I mean, and there was one family that, one male bass that he kind of homed in on, you know, during the mating process and all that. It was very interesting. Yeah, very cool. So, but like I said, he was a guy, Glenn Lau was a guy before his time, you know. He's down there with those underwater cameras. He's in his, you know.
Well, I guess watching mating bass, it kind of goes along with my theory about the X-rated movie theaters. So he's down there with them, and did he have, like, names for the bass?
No.
No, okay.
No. But he didn't get carried away.
Well, at least he's not going to be like the one dummy who went out, was up there with the bear. Remember, there was some guy who was up there with hanging out with the brown bears, and you know, he'd be camping right. He ended up, you know, getting eaten, killed, and eaten by them.
Yep, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, so if you're gonna be way safer to do the bass thing than to hang out with the bears.
Yeah,
so,
if you're gonna do some kind of documentary, I mean, do it with something that can't eat you.
Keep it safe.
Yeah,
that's a good general rule of thumb, Tom.
Yeah, that would be safe.
Now,
and then 70, you know, those people who go in those cages with the sharks. I mean, that's a little scary too. You know, yeah, you're in a cage, but man, what? I don't know. I wouldn't do it.
Well, didn't they have a problem like that in Jaws, Tom, where the cage didn't hold?
Yeah, because that was a really big shark.
Was that Richard Dreyfuss in the cage?
Yeah, he was one of them. Yeah.
And then they busted it up, and he somehow swam to the top or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Important safety tip out there: just study stuff that can't kill you.
Yeah.
Now, did that movie spur you on to become the bass pro that you became?
I don't know. I don't know, but I know I learned a lot about bass just from watching that movie.
Well, what did you learn about bass from the movie?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're almost up against a break, so why don't we talk about that after the break? How's that?
Well, that's a good idea. I want to learn, what did you learn about bass other than they live in water?
Okay, we'll be right back after this break. We'll be doing the gut report, and then we'll be talking about bass and the movie Big Mouth. So stay tuned, folks. You're listening to the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Come here. I'm going to eat you. I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain. Get in my belly.
The Gut Report is brought to you by Discount Liquor. Well, I'll tell you what. I like pasta. I like salsa. And one day I was thinking, this is a while back, I said, well, why don't I put the two together? And, you know, I was going through the Gut Report recipes, and I thought, hey, I haven't seen this in a while. I haven't made in a while. So a few weeks ago, I made some more, and it is wonderful. I call it Mexican pasta. You take a pound of pasta, any kind you want, and then you take a jar of salsa and a can, a 15-ounce can of tomato sauce. Mix it all together. It's great hot or cold. If you like pasta and you like salsa, you'll like Mexican pasta. Trust me. The Gut Report is brought to you by Discount Liquor, where you're going to find the best price, selection, and service at 51st and Oklahoma in Milwaukee and Main Street in Barstow in Waukesha. For weekly specials, go to DiscountLiquorInc.com.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors. We are presented by Baitmate Fish Attractant. And thank you, Tom, for that wonderful salsa pasta recipe. Is that's what it was, right?
Yeah.
Salsa pasta. Okay, yeah. You know, that pasta's got a lot of carbs in it, Tom. You really shouldn't be eating too much of that pasta. You know,
there's a lot of things I shouldn't do.
We need you to focus more on the fruits and vegetables.
Oh, I eat fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Protein.
You know, it's
protein.
Funny. There's not a vegetable that I don't like. I like them all. I mean, even like Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts.
I like them all. I like all vegetables. Yeah.
Spinach? You like spinach?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Do you grow spinach?
No.
Hey, no. Talking about Gut Report, my brother-in-law, Forrest, who sometimes emails the show, he was up there fishing that last week, I believe, the barge up there by La Crosse, the Great Alma Float. And my nephew Hayden caught a big flathead catfish. I guess it was about a 20-pound flathead.
Oh, wow.
And he fought it forever on a little rod and reel and got it in. And he and I were going back and forth on the text, kind of debating. I said, well, what are you doing with it? He says, I'm going to eat it. And I didn't think flathead catfish were good to eat, but then he sent me some recipes. So I don't know. Have you ever heard of eating flathead catfish?
Oh, yeah. I've had some in the past. Yeah. Yeah, they're fine.
It was good.
I don't know if I'd want to eat one that was like 30 pounds, but, you know, if you get those anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10 pounders, those are fine. Oh, yeah, those are good.
Yeah, because the only catfish I ate, my brother caught like an 8-9 pounder in Missouri. I think he might even had like a trot line out on a river or something. And I took and filleted it and tried to fry it, and it was just bad. It was all just fishy, stinky, I don't know. So that turned me off on catfish. Now, maybe I didn't prepare it right. You know, I did have catfish. In fact, when I went down for the Super Bowl in 96, we all went down to New Orleans. We went to this all-you-could-eat buffet. And, you know, we got all-you-can-eat buffets up here, but they don't have catfish. Down there, they had catfish. And I had some of the catfish, and it was okay. But I would sure take our perch, our bluegill, our walleye, our northern pike over catfish.
Definitely.
But they love their catfish down south.
Yeah. Should we get back to that big mouth, what we were going to talk
about? Yeah, tell the big mouth story. Yeah. What did you learn, Tom?
You asked me what I learned. Well, I learned, like, about the five senses and how they're used and the lateral line and how they can detect things in the water that you can't hear or maybe even see, like at night. Also about how fast a fish can how fast a bass can suck something in and spit it back out before you even have an inkling that they were on your line. I mean, in and out, I mean, within less than a blink of an eye. And you know, when they spawn, you know, between 65 and 70 degrees. And it depends on the lake, you know, shallower lakes, deep lakes, whatever, at time and all that. But that's the general temperature range. And also that, this was the interesting part, that, you know, when after the male bass and the female bass, she drops her eggs and he fertilizes them, she leaves. Mm-hmm. She doesn't hang around. The male bass stays there and protects them. And what's really weird is that, well, after he's done protecting them and they get to be about an inch long, they get rid of their yolk sac and they start swimming, what he does, he takes that group of bass, the little babies that go out to where there's weeds, and then he'll try to eat as many as he can. And those little baby bass, they hide in the weeds then. And it's basically teaching them, don't trust anything in the water. Not even your daddy bass. Don't trust nothing in the water.
So,
it's very interesting.
So they actually start eating their own,
yeah,
just to teach them to be afraid of anything else that swims.
Exactly. They jump after them, and that's why they take them out to a weedy area first, okay? And so that they can hide in the weeds then, because then it's just harder to find them.
You're teaching
them. Hey, we got an email.
Okay.
This is from Jeffrey. And this is interesting. This is awesome. Jeff says, you saw that movie at the Capitol Theater in Racine. They specialized in showing independent films that were not in general distribution. I saw some Marty Stauffer nature films there and other nature films like that. Love your show, from Jeff in Union Grove. So there you go, Danny. That was at the Capitol Theater in Racine. At least I remembered it was in Racine. How about that?
Yeah, and they specialized in amateur and X-rated movies, I'm thinking.
Independent films. Yeah.
Independent X-rated films. We got a caller, Tom.
X-rated.
Well, I bet they did. Place called the Capitol, downtown Racine. They had some seedy stuff, buddy. I just know it.
And then we got another one here.
Did you hear me?
This is from Tim. Tim says, hi, Tom. I was able to find the sequel to Big Mouth called Big Mouth Forever on YouTube. Here's the link below. Love the show. Ooh, I got a link for Big Mouth Forever.
Boy. Well, your weekend is made. It's going to be more exciting. This will be the most exciting weekend you've had in years, Tom. We've got a caller.
Oh, okay. Who do we got?
Let's go to Tom in Greenfield.
Okay. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, morning, guys. How are we doing?
Good.
Doing
What's
good.
On your mind? My dad was from Arkansas, and we used to do the trot lines for catfish.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I've heard this more than once. What you do is your bigger catfish, like 15 pounds and up, what you do is you get them home, and you have to let them, you put them in fresh water, and what they do is they filter their system out. And it works real well. I was up on Lake Wisconsin. I caught a 32-pound cat.
Wow.
And I went to the bait store across the street. It's in Oakey, Wisconsin. Excellent place for fish, man. Shore fish, everything. I caught a 33-pounder on a big Rapella. So I was casting for walleyes and stuff. But anyhow, I caught the catfish. I tied him up at night on his pier. I went there the next morning. I said, "Do you want the thing?" He goes, "Oh, God, yeah." He took it, and he put it in one of his empty minnow tanks, right? I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm letting it filter out." And now I went back to when I was a kid, and my family used to put them in one of those great big metal tubs.
Yeah.
And just leave them sit there for about a day. They won't die on you, but what they do is they filter themselves out. It flushes all the mud taste and stuff out of them. You flay them up and you cube them. You make them into steaks. They're excellent fried. Smoked cat I don't get into too much, but it's good, you know. But you got to let them filter themselves out, and they taste phenomenal.
Oh, that's a great tip. Thanks, thanks, Tim.
Yeah, that's better than Tom's gut report right there. By golly,
Hey, watch it now. Watch it.
You know, I also got a text in the meantime from one of our listeners, Nick. He said flathead catfish are like the best, really good, I guess. And my brother-in-law, he sent me a picture. He made blackened catfish. He cooked that up, and apparently it was real good. Now, the other question I had, Tom, was this: if you get a big, that was my first thought, a big flathead catfish out of like the Mississippi River. I don't know. The ones that are in the rivers for a long time, they got more of the toxins and stuff. Now, my brother-in-law said, "Oh, if it were the Wisconsin River, I wouldn't eat it. But the Mississippi, I'm not worried." But I don't know.
What does Tim think?
What's that?
Oh, is Tim gone?
Oh, I guess we...
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Thanks for the call, Tim.
That was a good,
well,
good call.
I'll tell you, many years ago, I was fishing a bass tournament on the Mississippi River, and one of the guys there caught a really big catfish. It was like a 30-pounder, you know. I mean, it was a big old cat. And actually, I know it was illegal at the time, but there was a guy from Illinois there, and he gave him $50 for that catfish. You know, but this guy knew he kept it. He was going to keep it, okay? But then when the guy offered him $50, he sold it to him.
Well, $50 back then, Tom,
yeah.
That was a lot of money.
Yeah. So, and like I said, that was illegal, but, you know, he didn't care. He's taking the cash.
Well, you know, at this point, statute of limitations are, you know, we don't have to worry about getting
yeah,
in trouble
yeah,
now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to watch this sequel. Yeah, I just, you know, if you don't hear from me after the Hornswoggle, you know, that's because I'm watching a movie. No, I'm joking. Listen, we got to go to a break. Coming up next, folks, is the Hornswoggle, and it's brought to you by Carl's Country Market out there in Menominee Falls on Pilgrim Road in Silver Spring, right on the corner there. Get all your award-winning sausages, meats, and a lot of German specialties, and that's at Carl's Country Market. And if you win the Hornswoggle, you'll get a $10 gift certificate to Carl's Country Market. Also, it's brought to you by Baitmate Fish Attractants and Coleman Insect Repellents. And if you win the Hornswoggle, you'll get a really nice prize package of Baitmate Fish Attractants and Coleman Insect Repellents, which you'll need both, the Baitmate for year-round and the Insect Repellents for all summer. So stay tuned, folks. Call 414-799-1250. That's 414-799-1250. And if you've won in the last 2 months, don't bother calling. Sam the man is keeping track of who's won and who's not. So, anyway, we'll be right back, folks. Good luck.
Born to be wild. Born to be wild.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors, presented by Bait Mate Fish Attractant. We want to thank all our listeners out there today. We always take a moment to thank law enforcement, the first responders, healthcare workers, military. Thanks for what you do, protecting us, keeping us safe, and thanks to all our listeners. Also, we have our Hornswoggle segment now. Do we have a lucky contestant, Sam?
Yep, let's go to Matt in Caledonia.
Matt in Caledonia. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Good morning, Bushy and Tom. Hello.
What's doing good.
Good luck to you today.
Yeah, you know, yeah, now, like, I felt bad we had a two-week, we had someone lose 2 weeks in a row. What was the name? It wasn't you, Matt. Was it a Mark or somebody? I can't remember. I'm getting old and forgetful, but I don't think we've ever had a three-week stretch where someone lost the Hornswoggle. So no pressure or anything like that, but we don't want you setting a new record here. So you got to win.
Okay. I'll try.
All right, here we go. Trout. Trout, in general, prefer cooler water temperatures. Trout prefer cooler water. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
That is a no Hornswoggle.
No Hornswoggle. Okay. All you need is one more. Pike. Many people are used to catching small little, skinny pike in little warm ponds, but the fact of the matter is that bigger pike prefer cooler water as well. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
I would say Hornswoggle.
No, that's a no Hornswoggle. Bigger pike prefer the cooler water. Okay, if you get this one, you win. Here we go. Tiger muskie. The tiger muskie is actually a cross between a northern pike and a muskie. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
No Hornswoggle.
No Hornswoggle. All right.
All right.
We got a winner. Our good friends at Bait Mate will be happy. They can send out a wonderful prize package, Tom. Not just a prize package, but a wonderful one.
Okay.
And Matt, make sure you leave your name and address, and we'll get that. I'll also get you a $10 gift certificate for Carl's Country Market, where you can buy lots of delicious, nutritious stuff out there.
Because the reason I said about the northerns, I know occasionally we fished in Canada, and then where the reeds are in the shallow waters, you could do buzz baits there, and they would bite even some big northerns. But I'm sure the bigger ones like the deeper water then also.
It kind of depends on the time of the year. Now, like, you are right, in Canada, you get a lot of those big northerns and they go into those spawning bays. And then after the spawn, they'll kind of hang out in those shallow warming bays as the water temp starts to warm up, gets their metabolism going, and then they can start feeding. But by the time those water temperatures get up into the mid 70s and higher, Those pike are out of there. They're off in the deep water. So you are right. There's times when the rest of the lake is 50 degrees, they might prefer a shallow bay with warming water then. But anyway, glad you could win. And thanks for listening. We'll get that. Make sure you leave your address. And hopefully you can play again sometime after 2 months. Wait two months. You can call again.
Super. Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care, man.
Okay, Danny, we got another email.
Boy, they're coming in hot.
Yeah, this is from Mary. And thank you, Mary, for doing this. I appreciate it. It says, hi, guys. Here is your movie on Amazon. Love your show. That's from Mary. Amazon.com. It says Big Mouth DVD in Movies and TV. Now, you know, it's funny, Mary, because I went on Amazon just yesterday and typed in Big Mouth DVD, and there was a bunch of kids stuff or some old movies that were called. I think there was a Jerry Lewis movie called Big Mouth or something like that. So maybe I missed it. I'm gonna look again, because if they got it, I'm buying it so that I can let Danny watch it. So
Tom,
anyway.
Even yeah? If you give me free popcorn, I'm not going to watch the movie Big Mouth.
Why not?
I don't know. I don't want to watch a movie about a bass.
Why not?
Well,
what do you got against bass?
I guess not that I like catching bass. But I just don't see how I could get excited watching a movie. I'm surprised you spent the gas money to drive to Racine to watch the doggone thing.
Well, I don't know. I liked it.
You must have carpooled back then.
Of course,
gas
was somebody or not. I don't
gas was 20 cents a gallon back then.
I think it was 24.9.
24.9. No, you know, it's funny.
I don't remember.
I remember in Green Bay as a kid, they'd have gas wars, and you, I remember prices like 24.9. And
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we got another one about catfish. This is from Greg. And
okay.
By the way, if you want to email us at ceoguys@yahoo.com. All right, this is from Greg, and he says, Tom and Dan, there is a great article in the In Fisherman magazine about catfish flavors in July 2021 issue. It tells you about why they taste the way they do and it verifies what your caller said about filtering them in fresh water. Love your show, from Greg. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. So it just shows that our listeners know what they're talking about.
Well, at least they do, because I don't know about us sometimes. matter of fact, I got the July 2021 issue right in front of me right now as we speak. I'm looking at the cover, and they talk about an article that says Super Shallow Channel Cats. So, yeah, I'm going to have to check. You know, I've heard of filtering. I have heard that with fish before as far as filtering. Seems to me somebody said that about bullheads. Somebody told me if you catch bullheads, do the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I was younger, we caught a bunch of bullheads and we ate them and they were really good. But we never filtered them. I mean, we're talking about fish that were 10, 11, 12 inches long only, you know.
Well,
they weren't that big. So maybe they didn't need filtering because they were still small.
Well, when my cousin moved to Green Bay, he was a couple years older than me. I took him down to the East River, which runs into the Fox there, and we were catching bullheads and carp. And I always just, you know, let everything go. But he kept a bunch of bullheads because he was talking about how good they are. Well, he took them home, skinned them. I had never heard of skinning fish at that point either, but he skinned these fish, and he ate them, and I guess they were terrible. So, I don't know. I guess he probably should have filtered those out as well.
Yeah, maybe. And I think it also depends on where they come from, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That muddy East River was kind of a polluted body of water back then.
Yeah, so I'm sure that makes a difference, you know. After the top of the hour, got a few, interesting stories. I think they were interesting about, you know, cleaning fish and about a friend of mine who caught two catch and release world records on catfish on the Fox River up by Green Bay. Two of them. They were the catch and release. They go by inches. Yeah.
Was it line class records?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that's what they were. Yes.
Okay.
Line class catch and release. And I'll tell you about it when we come in after the break, but one of them was on 2-pound test and 4-pound test.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Really small.
Set your drag light.
So, well, hopefully everybody will stay tuned and listen to it, because we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes to do this, the second hour of the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. Stay tuned, folks.
The following is paid commercial programming. The content and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WSSP, Odyssey Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors.
From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between, let's talk everything outdoors.
All aboard! Ha, ha, ha! You're on the crazy train!
All aboard!
Welcome to the Wacky Walleye Cutting Edge Outdoors Show. Fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on 1250 AM, The Fan.
Well, that's right, folks. You
are listening to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors on Sports Radio 1250 AM. Dan Bush and myself, Tom Neubauer, come to you every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 a.m., and we are a live show. So if you want to get involved and got any questions or comments, just call us at 414-799-1250 or email us live at ceoguys@yahoo.com. Well, it's another, and oh, don't forget, we got Sam Schmitz on the boards as well. So anyway, folks, Danny, here we go, second hour. And what was I going to tell you? Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you something about, what was it again? Oh, a friend of mine, an old friend of
yeah,
mine.
Yeah, world record catfish.
Yeah, yeah, and line pound test, one of them, the four-pound test one was a 40, I think it was 42 inches, 42-incher on four-pound test on the Fox River up by Green Bay. And the other one was on two-pound test was a 38-incher. On two-pound test, and the two-pound tester, he told me, he said it took him for it took him hours to get it finally. But I mean, how do you place something like that on two-pound test? I mean, I've caught catfish up there on the Fox River, and they're like having a bowling ball at the end of your line. I mean, they just stay right down.
So, what kind of catfish were they?
Flatheads. They were flatheads.
They were flatheads.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and how big was the biggest one?
42 inches on four-pound test and 38 inches on two-pound test.
So I've got the July issue of In Fisherman actually has their Master Angler Awards. I'm looking at it now, Tom, and for flathead catfish, the biggest one for last year was a 48-incher caught in Ohio. And then the second biggest one, caught in Fox River, Wisconsin, a guy from Kakana, 46-incher.
Wow.
And he caught that one on a bluegill. So I'm guessing if he caught it on a bluegill, I think they use those for flatheads, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Cut them in half or something like that?
Well,
or maybe even just use a whole live little bluegill?
Yep, cut the tail off, or like you say, cut them in half, or just use the whole little bluegill. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And then let's see if there's any others from, well, here's another one. Somebody from Nina from the Upper Fox River got a 43-incher. And then somebody from Sussex got one on Lake Michigan, a 38-incher. So, yeah, I guess we got a lot of big flatheads.
Did they say on what pound test lines those were?
No, probably the In Fisherman.
Like, yeah,
the In Fisherman Awards basically. The way it works is they've got, depending on where you're fishing, they got different regions, and they've got the qualifying length or weight for you to either, you know, catch and release it, or if you keep it, go by the weight, and then they got qualifying levels.
Right.
You know, so I think for like a northern pike, it used to be, 42 inches and 20 pounds, something like that. But, you know, the In Fisherman Awards... now it's mostly everybody entering the catch and release.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's maybe a dozen kept fish listed here, but the thing that kind of bums me out is I used to like to see the weight of the fish, and it used to be pretty much most people for the In Fisherman Awards. The kept division was way more than the catch and release. Now, I realize catch and release is important. We all want to do it. We all do it, in fact. And I mostly catch and release myself. But as far as for awards, I just get a lot better kick out of seeing the actual weight as opposed to the length of the fish and trying to imagine, well, what did that weigh?
Right.
You know,
there can be such a big variance, you know.
Right, right. Now, as far as bass, it's amazing. Looking at largemouth bass, what would you say is the longest bass you ever caught, Tom?
I've caught, two of them that were 24 inches, but the heaviest one was a 23.5-incher out of Pewaukee. I caught a 24-incher on Big Cedar and a 24-incher out of Beulah. The one out of Big Cedar was average size and weight. We didn't weigh it, you know. We took a picture. My one son was with me and took a picture in that, but that was like average. The one out of Beulah was a skinny thing, had a big head and skinny body. I had a couple of guiding clients that day, and they invited me to fish along, and I was showing them how to work a Zara spook, and that's when I caught that one. But the one on Pewaukee, that one was 23 and a half inches. That was on the cover of a magazine, as a matter of fact. And that one was a heavy dog. I wish I would have waited. I had a couple of guiding clients, and I was trying to show them how to work a spinnerbait over the tops of the weeds with a bait casting outfit. And I really wish one of those guys would have caught it instead of me, because it would have been hanging on their wall right now. But that one was, that was a heavy fish. Yeah, that was a good one.
The you meant, okay, 24 inches. Looking at the In Fisherman Awards, the biggest one that I see listed here is a 27 and a half out of a private pond in Indiana. The biggest one in Wisconsin on the list, if I go down here, let's see, looks like there's a 23 and a half incher caught out of Crooked Lake, Wisconsin. Yeah, so I'd say if you got a 24 incher, I mean, that's about as big as they're going to get in this state, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of a couple that were maybe a little, I think, I never saw them. I heard, okay, so you never know. Sometimes
what
fudge on these.
What did you hear, 25, 26
yeah,
inches?
Yeah, like 25 or 26 incher. But like I said, you know, sometimes people exaggerate, you know. People ask me, like, that one out of Pewaukee, what did that weigh? And I said, well, I don't know, because I didn't weigh it. So, I mean, I don't want to be accused of being one of those over-exaggerators, you know. So I said it was big. It was definitely over six. But personally, I think it was over seven.
Didn't you have a scale with you, or don't you even bother?
No, I have one. It's right. I'm looking at it right now. It's on the shelf right here in front of me. I got to look at it once and see what brand it is. But no, back then I didn't carry them with me. This is the Normark. Goes up to 10 pounds, digital scale.
Oh, you got a digital. I was thinking you probably had one of those Deliers. Remember the old Delier?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It had like a tiny little hook that you couldn't even get in the fish if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And then it had the tape that you could slide right out. I think Zebco made it.
Yes, yes. And I remember I had one of those, but you could never really trust the weight on it, on those things. And it was hard to see, too, you know.
So. Well, yeah, and it would get you within a pound anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did, as a kid, I had one in my tackle box, and, you know, I did use it to weigh some pike. And, you know, I could tell if it was right around 7 or 8 pounds. And as a kid, of course, you always rounded it off to the bigger anyway, so... If it was hovering between 7 and 8, it was an 8 pound fish, as far as you were concerned.
Yeah, and the other thing, that the tape measure in there was good to have, because I remember when the musky size limit was 32 inches, and I remember using that tape measure, you know, measuring muskies, you know, on that. I can't believe.
Well, you know,
at one time the musky size limit was 32 inches.
That seems. I remember as a kid, I think it was 30 when I was growing
yeah,
up.
Might
I think.
Have been, yeah.
I think the limit was 30, and Dad, for the life of him, would be casting suix and stuff with an old bait caster that backlashed every other cast, and to catch a 30-inch fish. I mean, that as a kid, Tom, that sounded big to me, because
yeah.
What the biggest fish I'd ever caught was a 24-inch northern, and yeah, in fact, as a kid catching northerns, I used to weigh the northerns a lot. And I pretty much could tell a 24-inch northern would normally be about 4 pounds. 27-incher would get you up to that 5-pound mark. 29 would be about the 6-pound mark. And anything over that, it was kind of more of a guessing game. But I pretty much could tell the weight of most of the pike I caught, because I used to always, you know, measure them and weigh every one I caught. And back then, it was pretty much you kept everything. I do think, though, as far as weighing fish, one thing that I did this last year, Tom, I bought this like a bag. It's by Berkley. It's the type of bag that the tournament bass guys use to put their fish in when
yeah.
they, you know, it's like the big plastic bag. And the reason I got it was when I was weighing a big bass with my brother a year ago, you know, trying to get the hook under the gill plate of a flopping fish, and the fish can start they can flop right off that hook on a scale. And I thought, you know what? I think it's better to get them in the bag, and then you can just hang the scale, you know, by the handle of the, you know, take the, you know, the handle of the bag and slip the hook from the scale under that. And first I try and get a little bit of water in the bag, so before I put the fish in there. But that way you're not going to have the fish flopping off and landing on the floor of your boat.
You know, speaking of that, at this one tournament, it was called the Balsam Lake Pro Bass Invitational. And I fished that for a few years. And anyway, these two fellas had their six or eight bass, something like that, whatever the limit was. And they had them all in one of those heavy-duty plastic bags. And the guy stepped out of his boat with all these fish in that bag, stepped onto the dock, made about two steps, and the bag broke. And all those fish fell back into the lake. One fell into his boat. A couple he was trying to pick up that were flopping on the pier. I mean, I felt bad for the guy. You know, I felt bad.
So it broke?
Yeah, it broke.
That, wow.
And there was a little hubbub about it because the bags were provided by the tournament committee, the people running the tournament. And the guy whose bag broke, I think he was blaming them for their shoddy bag and wanted to be compensated because he had so many fish. And I don't remember whatever happened, you know. But yeah, the guy was pretty PO'd. But you know, what are you gonna do?
Speaking of bass tournaments, Tom. Do most of the tournaments, when they do the weigh-ins, do they normally just release the bass right at that site, or do they take them out onto the lake, or does it depend on the tournament?
It depends on the tournament. A lot of them release them right at, they'll have them in a holding tank, you know, with an aerated holding tank, and then have a big tube that goes back out into the lake, you know. I mean, so some of them do that. Some of them, you know, they got a pontoon boat sitting there, or a couple of pontoon boats, and they put them in these big tanks, take them out somewhere out a little ways, not in real deep water, but just a little bit of ways away from where they were weighing the fish, you know, and they take them out and put them in the lake in different areas. So, yeah, it depends on the tournament committee, you know, who's running it.
Have they, Tom, ever done any studies that show
that
the fish eventually makes its way back to the home range where it was caught? Have there been? Because you think about it, like the Sturgeon Bay Bass Tournament, what if someone catches one at the Strawberry Islands and they release it in the ship canal or wherever?
Yeah.
I mean, do those fish find their way back?
Now, I don't know if they'd find it that far. You know, that's a long ways. But they did do a study. They put homing transmitters on bass that were caught in the Mississippi River. And now there were bass that were caught on the other side of the river, downriver, upriver, whatever, and they put these transmitters in these fish, and then they released them at the weigh-in sites, okay, that were one part of the river. And the majority of those bass they found went back to where they were caught, the area, the general area. Now, I mean, maybe not exactly, but the general area. So a lot of them did. Not all of them, but a lot of them did.
Okay. Yeah. So and you wonder how does a fish find their way? Well, I think now, like you think about it, like the migrating fish, like salmon and so forth.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that they go by sense of smell in some way. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, I mean it's amazing that they can find their way back. You know, you got all those salmon out in Lake Michigan. And the ones that do come up, let's say like the Milwaukee River, Sheboygan River, and all the other ones, it's amazing that they find their way, you know? It really is. Just amazing. Hey, Danny, we're up against a break. So,
gotcha.
And when we come back, got another email. So, folks, if you want to email us, it's ceoguys@yahoo.com, or if you want to just call us, it's 414-799-1250. Dan Bush and I, Tom Neubauer, will be right back in just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned for more.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. We are presented by Bait Mate Fish Attractant. And Tom, fishing on Lake Michigan, from what I hear, has been going pretty good. It's a good season. I think there's an abundance of alewives. When I was up smallmouth fishing, one of the theories about why the smallmouth fishing may not hasn't been as good this year is all the alewives. And I can attest to the fact that I actually did snag alewives when I was casting for smallies. And you could look down in some areas and just see these schools of alewives. And I was talking to Tilkey. I was up in Green Bay at Smokies on the Bay and talking to Tilkey. And he said muskie fishing has been pretty tough up there so far this year. And one of the things he mentioned was an abundance of alewives. And that, you know, the fish are, just have more food than they know what to do with. So I don't know. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't, but you're absolutely right. The more food they have, the tougher it is, you know, for them to grab one of our baits. But we've got three more emails, Danny. We got another email from Mary, and she sends a photo of this picture of a bass looking at me, and it says big mouth, heart, out of print, hard to find. Now, she gives me the link, and I know why I didn't find it now on Amazon, is because I used big mouth in two words, and she's got it listed as one word, big mouth as one word. So maybe that's why I didn't find it the first time. Thank you, Mary, for that. And I sent you a link about the tiger muskie, if you look on it. Did you get that? I forwarded it to you from Jim. Jim said, since you mentioned tiger muskies in your Hornswoggle, here is one caught and released on Pewaukee Lake by my friend Pat a couple of years ago. Do you know when they stocked them on Pewaukee and for how long? Do you know anything about that, Dan?
Actually, I'm just opening the email now. Actually, they have not stocked tiger muskies since the 80s. Most Midwestern states quit stocking tiger muskies. Two reasons I was given, well, several. One, they don't have a chance to naturally reproduce. Two, they were too easily caught, so they thought that they were getting harvested too much. But now a third thing that I heard recently is that to get the tiger muskies, whatever, the fingerlings, whatever you want to call them, they're more expensive. I don't know why we couldn't go to some of the... I mean, they stock them still in the western states. The reason is they're trying to keep the carp population down, and they want to, you know, preserve their trout waters, but they don't want a predator that's going to be able to reproduce. Tiger muskies don't reproduce. Now, looking at this photo, it does indeed appear to me that it's a tiger muskie. So it would have been the result of a natural cross here on the lake between a pike and a muskie, which obviously is rare because the muskies themselves don't really have a whole lot of success spawning on Pewaukee. From what I've been told, it's because the carp kind of muck it up. You know, the muskies try and do their job, but then the carp are in there. And, you know, so I'm sure there's some that manage to get naturally get it done. And obviously in the case of a tiger muskie, that, you know, obviously that must have been a successful reproduction there. But really rare.
Yeah. Now we got another one. It says, this is from James. And James says, good morning, Tom and Dan. As the listener stated about placing catfish and bullheads in fresh water to cleanse themselves, in reality, it's usually a 2 to 3 day process with replenishing with fresh water every day. Back in the day, we'd collect large snapping turtles and place them in old wash tubs for 3 to 5 days with changing the water until several days the water in the tub wasn't dirty anymore. Then it was soup time. Take care and tight lines from James. Well, you know, I've had turtle soup before and I didn't really care for it, but, and it might have been because it wasn't clean, you know, done the fresh water thing, but I have had turtle strips fried that were very good. So,
yeah, it's supposed to be cleaned. It's supposed to be just like chicken.
Well, not exactly.
Of course, they say
yeah.
Of course, they say everything's like chicken.
Well, it had the texture, but, you know, there's dark meat and white meat on the turtle, you know, and it had that texture. But then again, when you're coating it with stuff, you know, and deep frying it, you know, it was good, though. The deep fried stuff was good. The turtle soup, I didn't care for.
Well,
like I said, it probably wasn't, you know, freshwater cleansed.
You know, you talk about turtles. Several things come to mind. Number one is our friend Gordy. He used to, you know, set a couple lines and catch turtles down by the muskie shop. And then he would do the same thing. I think he would put them in like a tank with water for a while before he'd, you know, clean them. But, you know, I watched him, you know, butchering a snapping turtle. And let me tell you, it's not worth all the work that I saw being put into it, to be honest with you.
I have to agree. Up on the Castle Rock Flowage one time, pre-fishing for a state tournament, I snagged one. And it was pretty good size, too. And the guy I was with, he had experience with them. So we kept it, and I don't think we should have. I think it might have been out of season. But I didn't even know at that time. And when we got back to shore, he cleaned it, right? And you're right. It was a lot of work. It was difficult. And some of those muscles kept on twitching a while after, you know, it was cut away from the body. Yeah, it was a lot of work. It really was.
And in the case of a snapping turtle, I think even if they're dead, I think you want to cut the head off, because I don't know if they can reflexively bite you still when they're, but I don't know.
I wouldn't doubt it. And, you know, their necks stick out further than what you might think. So you got to keep your hands and fingers and whatever away from them. Otherwise, they'll latch onto you otherwise.
Yeah, I what was that one guy? That one guy on TV, they called him the Turtle Man or whatever. He'd go grab snapping turtles out of ponds and stuff. Kind of a crazy guy. What'd they call him? The Turtle Man. And I think he was missing some teeth as well. But that show's not on anymore. I'm thinking maybe he got killed. You know, he got bit by a water moccasin or something, because that guy was nuts.
Well, you know, these people who do what they call noodling, where they go underwater and they try to grab these catfish out of from under the logs or under embankments and all that. I mean, how do you know there's not a big snapper underneath there, you know, ready to take a finger off? I would never do that. No way.
Well, the turtle man, he'd go underwater and he'd grab the turtles. He'd grab the snapping turtles.
That's crazy.
I think the snappers would turn and try and go away, and he'd feel around to the end that's not the head end, and he'd grab them by the shells and pull them out. He was nuts, man. And he's in these dirty, dirty waters, too. You know, they have to be polluted, you know, full of cow manure and everything else. And that guy's in there. Let me tell you, man. Whew, he must have had some kind of immune system. But, it was a show years ago. I don't think it was that long ago that I saw it, but maybe I'm getting old and it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember the Turtle Man. I don't remember that.
Well, if we got listeners out there who remember the movie Big Mouth, there's got to be listeners out there that remember that turtle dude.
the turtle guy.
And he used to like get called for nuisance. You know, he'd be grabbing raccoons and skunks out of people's barns and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he'd make kind of a crazy yell, and he'd go live action. Yeah, he was kind of a crazy guy.
Yeah, I mean, guys who do stuff like that, or they're down in the Florida Everglades, walking in trying to catch those anacondas, those monster snakes. You know, I mean, people who do that stuff, I don't know if they just have big cojones or they just have very small brain cells. Or very few. I don't know. You know, I mean.
Well, they got those alligator guys, and they've now gone down to Florida to capture the snakes. And those guys get bit occasionally by those things.
Yeah.
And they're not poisonous, but I don't understand why they're capturing those snakes down there. I know they get paid for them, but why don't they just kill them, shoot them in the head, yeah. You know, take a shotgun or a 22, shoot them in the head and bring in the dead ones. I mean, are they actually keeping those snakes and relocating? They're an invasive species. They're destroying the Everglades. Are they actually selling those somewhere, or what are they doing with them? They should just all be dead.
I don't know what they're doing to them. I don't know what the limit is on them and where they go once they catch them. I mean, yeah, you would think that they would just shoot them in the head and be done with it because they're overrun with them. There's too many of them. So, but anyway, maybe somebody will, one of our listeners will give us some information. But right now, we got a little information coming your way in by way of a few commercials. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back with more of the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors, presented by Bait Mate Fish Attractant. And Tom, right now I believe we have a caller on the line. I believe it's Ted, gonna tell us about a special fishing tournament. So good morning, Ted.
Hey, Ted.
Good morning. Thanks guys for having me this morning.
Sure.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, tell us a little bit about what you got going on.
So on August 1st, up in Lake Winneconne Park, near Winneconne, Wisconsin, we will be hosting our first annual adult youth bass tournament. And what we're doing with that is getting a day reserved for any youngsters out there that may not get that day with their father, grandfather, aunt, uncle, mom, grandma, that wants to take them fishing for a day. And what ends up happening is there's a lot of guys that end up doing, whether it's walleye or bass tournaments during the summer, and they just get too busy pre-fishing, or the tournaments get too high stakes, and the kids get left behind. And so I decided to talk with my son, because he's been wanting to fish a tournament with me this year, and you know, I got to thinking, okay, let's host an event here, and let's get all the kids a chance to come out and fish competitive as a bass tournament, and keep it youth orientated, and that's kind of what we're doing here.
Well, that sounds interesting. So, what is it like? One adult and one youth per boat?
So, what we're doing is one youth and one adult, and you'll have the option of having another youth under the age of 16. So right now you can have one youth any age under 18, and then up to a second youth under 16.
Okay.
That way it gets everyone under 18 a chance to fish, and then if, you know, a high school team wants to come and they have a coach or a dad that wants to take them, and then it also gives that boat a chance to bring a younger brother, maybe a freshman or some younger child a chance that is just up and coming and wanting to learn more about the competitive fishing style.
And when is this going to take place?
It's going to take place Sunday, August 1st. We'll have a registration time from 5:30 a.m. to 6:30 a.m. and then a pre-tournament meeting, and then we hope to start our first flight at 7 a.m. and roughly finish up around 3 p.m. with the weigh-in and announce awards and have it all done by 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening.
And where's the headquarters at?
The headquarters is at, the boat launch will be at Lake Winneconne Park.
Okay.
The address is 498 Parkway Drive, Winneconne, Wisconsin, 54986.
And if people want more information, is there like a website or a phone number?
We have a Facebook group. The Facebook group, if you want to look it up, it's Andrew's First Annual Adult Youth Bass Tournament. We have a public event page as well as a group. That way, anybody wants to follow the group and be able to see any posts or updates, or as well as thanking our sponsors, and they'll be able to follow us that way.
Now, is there a fee per boat?
So the fee this year will be $60 per team. Ten of the dollars will go to a split big bass pot. The big bass pot will be the biggest largemouth and the biggest smallmouth. And if we can get 50 boats, big bass will pay out to $250 for each largemouth and smallmouth, the biggest fish. Our payout right now, we just got a generous contribution from Wacky Walleye, from Dale Stroshine, and he has offered for first, second, and third place as well to a guided whitefish trip this winter.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
How many boats are you hoping to get then? Are you going to cap it at a certain level, or what's your thoughts?
Our base payout is going off of 50 boats, but we are limited to 75 boats this year.
Gotcha.
Next year, we're hoping to maybe do some more with some more planning. We hope to maybe get up to 100 boats because out on the Lake Winneconne, Winnebago, Wolf River chain, it's plenty big enough, and it allows for everybody to spread out, go up the Wolf River, go up the Fox River, go out the Lake Winnebago, and everybody has their own space to fish.
Yeah, you do have plenty of water, that's for sure, Ted. Plenty of water.
And this is your first year doing it, so good luck with it. And if you want to call in and give us a report after the event, give us a call. Let us know how it went, and hopefully this can become an annual thing, and it's good that you're involving the kids.
Yeah, good luck with that, Ted.
Yes, thank you. We hope to make it many years.
All right. Well, good luck with it. Okay, take care now.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, you know, I forgot to ask him, Danny, if he got his permit.
What do you need the permit for?
Well, the DNR says you got to have a permit to run a tournament.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and because, depending on the body of water, sometimes there might be too many tournaments or there used to be at a given time or whatever, so they make sure that the tournaments are spread apart. And but anyway, you got to get a permit. That's what it is.
Now I do recall they because the guys doing the muskie tournaments years ago, I think all of a sudden they had to start doing that. And tournaments are fun. I do miss the fact that we don't have the muskie tournaments we used to have. We used to have the WMT, we had the Ironman one, and number of them. Now it's pretty much just they have the PMTT, which is the big expensive one that's all over the, I think they have like four major ones a year and then a championship, and I think the first one of the year is down in Kentucky on Cave Run.
Yeah, Milwaukee always had the Three Charlies tournament that John ran.
Yeah, I think they're still doing that.
They're still doing that? Well, did they do it last year during the COVID?
I
didn't hear about it last year.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. But the tournaments, it's not like, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, everybody and their brother was in these tournaments, and it was a lot of fun. You know, there was always the all the locals, and there was always the rivalries, and everybody was competing. The only problem with tournaments is with the PMTT, I think years ago, I think they caught a couple guys that were cheating in it. And apparently these guys had, they'd always be winning and doing well. And I remember hearing their names from some guys, and I'd be like, well, what's with it? No muskie fishermen, are that consistent. You know what I mean? Muskies are just, maybe the same bass guys can be on top all the time, but muskies fishing's tough. But apparently, I think somebody turned him in and came forward and said that he had driven a 40-inch fish out to him on the lake. And I think they actually had a hidden live well, in their boat as well. So some kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah,
crazy
stuff goes on. I remember that story about that years ago. I remember that.
I think that was in the PMTT, and I think those guys got in trouble. I never really heard the rest of the story. I was in a tournament, which will remain nameless, one of the last ones I was in, and it was a really tough tournament. And my brother and I were in there, and he got one nice big fish, but we didn't catch anything the second day. But the two guys that won it, they were done fishing, you know, like within almost the first hour both days, right? They doubled up, had their two fish. But they were so vague when they were asking them later, where'd you get them? On the weeds. What'd you use? A suic. And again, I don't know, but it, something just was fishy about it. Put it that way. Something just didn't sit right. And they might have been legit, but I think the problem with tournaments, especially big money tournaments, is that people, I don't know why human nature is such that people will cheat just because they want to, what? Well, that's why even like the ice fishing tournaments, they don't have big money in the fish. It's the raffles because people will catch a crappie out of some other lake and freeze it and bring it to just to win $25 for the biggest crappie in the fishery. It's just crazy.
As a matter of fact, you know, many years ago, one of my friends and I, we fished quite a few muskie tournaments, mainly on the Eagle River chain. And one of them was, God, I can't remember. It was called. It was out of the Hiawatha Supper Club. That's where the takeoff was. But there were 150 boats in that one. Just think of that, Danny. 150 boats. Now, over the years, you know, we caught a couple of small fish, but never anywhere could to come close to even the top 10. You know, there were some of those tournaments, and back then, you could catch more than what your limit was because you were releasing them right away. And, you know, a judge boat would come over and measure it, and you could release it. And so there were some tournaments where guys in the 2 days had six legal fish, you know. I mean, it was unreal. But there was also the Headwaters Chapter tournament up north there. And I forget the one that was out of the Hiawatha. I can't remember that one. But, you know, they were interesting. They were fun. And they had a raffle that usually gave away a boat. And these weren't cheap tournaments either. They brought in a lot of money, but they also brought in a lot of money to the town because guys were eating in restaurants. They were staying in motels, you know. They were buying their gas. I mean, everything, you know, they were spending a lot of money there. And so they always liked that stuff. But we got to go to our last break of the day, Danny. And when we come back, we got an email from Ken, and Ken's got some questions for us, okay? So we'll take care of that and more on the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. So stay tuned, folks. One more segment coming up.
It's the final countdown. The final countdown.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. We are presented by Baitmate Fish Attractant. Don't forget the baitmate, my friends. And I'm Dan Bush along with Tom Neubauer. Thanks for getting on board the crazy train with us. We're on the final stretch. And Tom, we got some emails, huh?
Yeah. No, this one comes from Ken. He says, Tom and Dan, I have 4 to 5 Shimano spinning reels, all mid-priced 4 to 5 bearings. I bought another one about a year ago, 5 ball bearings, a 4000 series. Now, that's a bigger one. This last one seems to constantly twist the line. I fish the same lures on all my spinning reels and generally braid with a fluorocarbon leader. I don't use swivels much at all. I've even let the entire line off the spool with nothing on the end of the line behind my boat. Still gets twisted up in a short time. Any idea what to try next? The reel is nice and smooth, and the drag is great, but the twisting has got me grabbing for another rod pretty often. Thanks, from Ken. Well, I'll tell you, Ken, there's 3 ways you can get put twist in a line: humanly, mechanically, or through the lures that we use. Those are the 3 main things. humanly, we can put it on backwards. Doesn't sound like you're doing that. Through the lures that we use, if you don't use swivels on certain lures, you're going to get a lot of line twist. Let's say like a MEP spinner or whatever. But the lures will come in when you're retrieving them, even like plastic worms. They'll spin. They'll twist the line. And then I can't remember the three I just said.
The third one you put in yourself.
Yeah, and mechanically. Mechanically is when you're turning the handle and no line is coming in. In other words, your drag is set maybe a little smoother, and you're turning the handle and no line is coming in. If you have, let's say, a 5-to-1 gear ratio spinning reel, for every one time you turn that handle, you'll put 5 twists in the line. So you got to watch out for that. Other than that, well, Ken, I don't know why one reel would be putting more twist in a line than another.
With spinning reels, if you can get one with a wider spool, like Fluger makes one called the Arbor, if you're going to use fluorocarbon, which might tend to twist more. But it does drive me nuts, Tom, when people will be fighting a fish, and I guess kids do it all the time. They don't know any better. But they're fighting a fish, and they're winding, and all you're hearing is the drag go, and they just keep winding like crazy. And it's like, at that point, just use the rod and just keep a steady bend. Don't just keep cranking the reel, and then they'll do it. They'll wind the fish right up to their rod tip and still be winding, or the bobber, They wind it right up, and it's hanging at the end of their rod, and they're still winding, and it's like, stop winding.
Well, this reel that Ken has that he's talking about, this 4000 series, now that's a larger reel, and that's a larger spool on that reel, okay? So, I have never experienced this myself, but I have heard some fellas say that some reels twist more than others. That I just don't see that, because and then Iowa made a reel that said the reel takes the twist out of the line. I don't know how it can, because once you twist the line, to untwist it, it has to go somewhere. Now, Ken is doing the right thing to get the twist out of his line by letting the line out his boat, letting the line out with nothing at the end, driving, slowly, let all the line off, almost all the line off the spool, and then reeling it back in. The twist is someplace to go, it goes out at the end of the line. But why it would twist dramatically after that right away, could be the lures that he's using, I don't know. It's another thing that puts twist in the line are bluegills. You know yourself, Danny, when you're bringing in a bluegill or a pumpkin seed, they come in circles. You know what I mean? They're always going in circles when you're bringing them up to the boat. Those circles are causing twist in the line too. So maybe Ken is fishing a lot of bluegills. I don't know.
The more I fish, the more I'm starting to come in thinking that, on a spinning reel, braid. I've never had braid twist. I almost think you're better off just going with braid with a fluorocarbon leader nowadays. I've never had a problem with braid getting twisted up like mono or a fluorocarbon. So I don't know. Maybe that's the way to go.
That might be it. And I still get twist on mine. And it happens, definitely.
We have a caller, Tom.
Okay.
Let's go to Dan in Menominee Falls.
Hey, good morning, Dan.
Morning, guys.
What's up?
I just looked up the Turtle Man.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, he was on Call of the Wild Man was the name of the show. It was on Discovery or Animal Planet.
Okay.
Animal Planet. Okay.
He ran into a lot of problems because they were using what they have in quote rescued animals, and some of them were really in bad shape, and several of them died. So he was running into problems with animal rights groups, and then he didn't have permits for a lot of the animals that he was supposedly capturing.
I got a question. Oh. Was that on the Discovery Channel?
It says Animal Planet. On.
Is that the cable station, Animal Planet?
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Is the guy still alive? Because he seemed like he was...
He's alive and well, but he's avoiding news headlines.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the info, Dan.
Okay, guys.
Appreciate that.
Tom, I think we're down to our last minute here, buddy.
Yeah, well, that's all I got for this week, Danny.
Before I go, the last thing I got for you is that there are some pumpkin seed bluegills spawning on Pewaukee Lake. Get along the shores, deck, or piers on the east end of the lake. You might get yourself some jumbos right now. And that's all I got.
Sounds like
to
a
all
good
the
job.
Listeners, thanks for listening. And God bless and stay free, everyone.
You've been listening to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors, presented by Baitmate Fish Attractant. Get out, enjoy the weekend, my friends. We'll talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.